When it comes to concerts, U2 is about as big as they get. They own the first, eighth, and 13th highest grossing tours of all time. And if it wasn't for their 1983 album, Under a Blood Red Sky, they may not be the live success they are today. That, along with a companion concert film, helped establish the band as a top-tier live act. Now, considering how much time, money, and effort goes into making albums sound just right, why do some live albums seem so much better? What makes a great live album? Stephen Thompson is an editor and reviewer for NPR Music and a panelist on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. He's also a native of Iola, Wisconsin. Stephen, good to have you back.
It's great to be back, Rob.
Well, I will say from a personal standpoint, that album we were just listening to is one of my favorites of all time. And a lot of tracks like New Year's Day there killed the studio ones for me. I don't want to hear those anymore because I like the live ones so much better. Do you have any songs or albums like that?
Yeah, I mean, I typically am somebody where I like to, you know, if I go to a concert, I'm always like wanting to hear the new stuff. I often wind up shifting a little bit more towards studio recordings. So a performer has to be incredibly special live for me to gravitate to a live album. But there are examples across the history of rock and roll, particularly, where a live album does so much more than a studio recording does. I mean, one of the first ones that sprung to my mind is Cheap Trick, which can often, a band that can often sound kind of limp and bloodless in the studio, but has this kind of crazed energy on stage that makes its songs, I think, irresistible.
What is it that makes a live album work, Stephen? What has to come together, do you think, for it to be, I don't know, to make you feel like you were there?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work being done by producers and engineers to capture. I mean, it is not easy to capture a great live recording and make that energy translate into a disc that you carry around with you. So I don't think we should lose sight of the feat of engineering that goes into making a great live album. But I also think, bands that have incredible chemistry when they play together, that's a very important thing. And I don't think you can discount the power of the perfect audience.
Yeah, how much do you want to hear the audience when you're listening to a live album? Because sometimes it's like, wow, these guys are pumped, it's fun. And sometimes it's like, okay, that's plenty of crowd noise, let's hear the music a little more.
Oh yeah, I have thoughts. I want to hear a lot of cheering. I want to hear, you kind of want to hear the that the audience is engaged. I don't want to hear clapping along. Only in certain circumstances do I want to hear singing along. But I tend to be someone who looks askance at when crowds are clapping along. I don't like clapping along. But at the same time, like, I sometimes love it when you have this very quiet and tender moment, and then a song ends and there's kind of this eruption of enthusiasm from a crowd. That to me is very powerful, because you kind of, that puts you in the room and kind of gives you a sense of what people are feeling as a song is being performed.
Now, your old cronies, Stephen, at the AV Club, you were there back in the 90s. I had a list of 20 live versions of songs that they say are better than their studio counterparts, and it's a great list of live albums. Here was their number one.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
The train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
So there's Johnny Cash singing about Folsom Prison at, prison. This is not
at
everybody's going to be able to create this unique moment, but this is a special one.
Yeah, there's so much going on in this recording. The original Folsom Prison Blues is from 1955, and it's a studio recording. It sounds like a studio recording. This recording that we just heard is from Johnny Cash's kind of 1968, I believe, comeback tour, when he was kind of revitalizing himself, kind of cleaning up his life and really trying to do something a little bit different. And so he goes and takes his band and goes to actual Folsom Prison and performs for the prisoners who are there, who feel that song in a way that no other audience can. And so you feel... Oh, there's so much going on in that performance. Everything from "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," you know,
right?
You're just immediately transported to the place, and you feel his energy performing it. You feel the crowd's energy experiencing it. You are taken to a time and place in a really powerful way. I agree that that was to me what popped into my head as like the best example of what we're talking about.
Talking to Stephen Thompson from NPR Music about the best live songs and albums of all time. You could share your favorite. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. One song you pointed us toward, Stephen, is a live version. This is Jeff Buckley and his cover of Hallelujah. We've got two bits from this one. Let's listen to a little bit of the body of the song.
And she tied you to her kitchen chair. She broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.
All right, Stephen, this has got to be in the running for the most covered song of all time, if it's not there yet. Why do you like this performance, this live release of it?
So what jumps out to me about this performance, first of all, you can hear the air in the room. Jeff Buckley leaves a lot of breathing space in this song, and I think his studio version of the song is basically perfect. I love it to the ends of the earth. But this recording is kind of one of the live recordings of his that I go back to again and again, in part because there is that weird kind of hanging in the air. You can imagine dust particles kind of dancing in the beams of light that head to the stage. You can really feel that the stillness in that room. And then at the end of that song, there is this incredible moment where he's let a note hang in the air, and then the song is over, and one person in the crowd screams, and then the whole room absolutely erupts. And there's this just cathartic release of just intensity of enthusiasm for the artist and for the performance that gives me chills.
Let's go to the end of the song now. You'd given us a heads up that that was your favorite bit. Here's a listen. You're okay with that kind of crowd noise in a live track, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. And you get, you hear at one point, you kind of hear someone cough. You know, you have that sense of like everyone kind of trying to hold it together and be as quiet as possible until the moment that they can just explode in appreciation.
Let's bring on a caller now. Mary Ann is with us in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Mary Ann, hi. Oop, Mary Ann, are you there? Oh, looks like we lost her. Let's try Paul in Marshfield. If not, we've got a problem with the phone lines. Paul, hi.
Hey, guys.
Yay. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Just a couple entries there. First of all, Rob, I loved you two growing up, and I loved their live stuff. And I have to say that's one thing that's maybe lacking from their music now is maybe a lack of spontaneity. I go back to probably the best live album that I think I've heard was The Last Waltz by the band. Yeah. And, you know, my kids are growing up in an age now where it's not so much the albums, but the YouTube presentations. And my favorite track off of that one, I mean, there are lots of great ones, but I love Van Morrison. I think he does Caravan, and I'm not sure if he's completely there, but it is an awesome, awesome performance. I also love Peter Gabriel's Secret Live records with Sinead O'Connor, and then Paula Cole also singing, I think, on live versions.
Wow. Paul, thanks. Paul had a lot there. Any you want to jump in on, Stephen?
Yeah, I agree completely. I think both of those examples are terrific examples of what I was talking about in the beginning about the importance of great engineering. And I love YouTube. I'm on YouTube all the time. But a lot of the live recordings that wind up on YouTube, you know, might be recorded with somebody's phone. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really fully, and you know, unless you have a really well-engineered recording to capture everything that's going on in a live performance. And The Last Waltz and those Peter Gabriel recordings are amazingly engineered. And it is very hard to capture all of the music that's going on stage.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about the best live versions of songs and albums. Stephen Thompson is with us, editor and reviewer for NPR Music. You can hear him on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite live performance of a song? Do you even prefer it to the album version? Do you have a favorite live album that you like to go back to? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
I want you to want me.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation on the best live versions of songs and albums. Here's one by Cheap Trick. Stephen Thompson, our guest, mentioned Cheap Trick earlier as a great live album. He's an editor and reviewer at NPR Music, panelist on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page with your favorite live albums, performances, songs, you name it. Back to our callers now. Ray is on the line in Milwaukee. Ray, hi.
I'm really glad you included Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah. You just brought a tear to my eye. I used to tour with a band called the Bodines, and we were on the East Coast in Philadelphia, and I heard a riot going on upstairs from our dressing room, and I thought to myself, well, what is this? And when I went upstairs, it was the Violent Femmes, who had taken over the stage. And then a year later, I toured and recorded with them on Viva Wisconsin. So I want to put in Gone Daddy Gone as the best live album and best live performance from the Violent Femmes because I'm playing bass on it.
Ray, even without the personal standpoint, Violent Femmes live recordings, pretty good. I mean, and honestly, though, that's a band where, Stephen, their studio recordings feel kind of live, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much energy there, and just so much mischief going on. You know, legendarily great live band. You know, and honestly, the Bodines not so bad either.
Thanks a lot for that call, Ray. I talked to one of the Femmes, and he said they couldn't get live shows. Nobody would give them gigs, so they would they'd play for lines waiting for concerts, and that's how they got discovered back in the day.
You know, a caller before was talking about the lack of spontaneity that sometimes affects performances, and I think that energy that goes into some of those performances when you're talking about a band like the Violent Femmes and some of these bands as they're coming up, or Cheap Trick in 1979, you know, at the live album that we played, there is something to be said for hunger, and maybe you lose a little bit of precision, but you have this enthusiasm and this drive that comes through, and the audience really feels that. An audience can tell when a band is there because they love what they're doing and they want to entertain. That's very infectious, and it creates this kind of this loop of enthusiasm that's hard to deny.
Back to our callers now. Deborah is with us in Milwaukee. Deborah, hello.
Hi, I'd like to say I was actually in Central Park and taped with my little cassette recorder Simon and Garfunkel live, but that's not on my top of my list. I sing at the Milwaukee Theater, and when he performed 1,000 Years for his encore, it was just amazing. It's my favorite song. And then Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears, when I'm on my bicycle and I'm not looking at it, sometimes I'm always surprised, that's a live version. So, and then I saw Talking Heads at the Convention Center Arena in Dallas in 1983, and that was great too. So that's those are the top of my list.
All right, Deborah's favorite live shows. And Talking Heads is a band that makes the list sometimes of best live albums. Stop Making Sense, which was a movie, too. Here's a listen to Life During Wartime. This is one that AV Club put on their choices. And Steven, I think this is a version I hear on the radio maybe as much as the studio version.
Yeah, this one has the benefit of being part of a film by Jonathan Demme that is one of the greatest concert films of all time. And part of what that recording gives you is not only the sound and the energy. You know, this is Talking Heads at the height of their powers. You also, when you hear it, you can picture it in your head. Even though, you know, if you haven't seen this movie since it came out in 1983, you can still see David Byrne in your mind's eye. And I think, you know, the power of a great concert recording sometimes comes through in the power of a great concert video.
Thanks for the call, Deborah. Glad you caught some great shows. We're talking about some of the best live albums and songs of all time. Stephen Thompson with us from NPR Music. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. David is with us in Partyville. Hi, David.
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah, I wanted to mention, if you haven't already done so, Frampton Comes Alive.
Yeah.
I think the biggest selling live album of all time. It's really awesome, from back in 1976. Peter Frampton, Do You Feel Like We Do, and a lot of other songs on that one. And then besides that, too, a little more contemporary is Samantha Fish. She's a contemporary blues artist, Americana. She does it all. And I don't think she has a live album out, but I've seen her live in Wisconsin here this year and a couple of times last year, and she's just an awesome guitarist and singer and songwriter, and you can probably catch some of her YouTube videos and also some things on her website, SamanthaFish.com.
David, thanks a lot for the call. So yeah, the Frampton Comes Live album, that's one, Stephen, I'll say when I've been driving at night, looking for something on the radio, you hit the beginning of Do You Feel Like We Do, you're like, okay, I'm set for like 10, 11 minutes now. It's almost like catching, you know, the studio Inagata De Vita, the full-length album.
Well, and one of the great things about Frampton Comes Alive is because it is one of the best-selling albums of all time, not just best-selling live albums, it's part of the monoculture, right? And so you feel... Do you feel like it? You feel like you've heard that record. Like you almost feel like you've been to that show, you know, because that record is just so much. It's like it's on the wind, and I think that's really nice. Whatever you feel about Peter Frampton, however those songs have aged for you, it is nice to have a live recording that like tens of millions of people have lived their lives to. You can just picture so much going on while people listen to that album in the 70s and 80s.
Let's go to another caller. Thanks, David. Kyle is with us now in Sheboygan. Kyle, hi.
Hello. How's it going today, gentlemen? I just wanted to mention an album that is closer to me. I'm 34 years old, so I haven't heard a lot of the older stuff when it came out, but Nirvana Unplugged.
Sure.
Unplugged album, if I think it. I
can't hear you so good, Kyle, but we got the Nirvana Unplugged, that MTV Unplugged edition, and this showed another side of Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, Stephen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because Nirvana kind of came out with this just burst of noise, and you know, people reacted, oh, it's grunge, and it influenced a lot of loud rock bands. But Kurt Cobain was at his heart a pop singer-songwriter. And so, you know, he was able to recast a lot of his own songs and some covers in this quieter way that really showed you the impeccable craft at the core of these songs. That is a marvelous performance. And that whole MTV Unplugged series in general did a really great job kind of showing people musicianship where they might not have seen musicianship otherwise. I always go back to that LL Cool J performance on MTV Unplugged to get a sense of the power and the musicianship and the force behind hip-hop at a time when hip-hop was still becoming accepted by mainstream critics.
Rick, we've got a lot of clips that we're not going to get to because we've got so many great callers. Rick is next in Powers Lake. Rick, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you got for us, Rick?
I'm thinking, like I said, I'm thinking of Frank Zappa's Does Humor Belong in Music, and specifically Terry Bozzio's version of Whipping Post.
All right, Rick, yeah. Frank Zappa had an album live at the Roxy and elsewhere, and Frank Zappa's music's so complicated, it's hard to imagine people pulling it off live, yet there they were.
Yeah, part of it is you were getting this incredible technical feat, but you were also just getting this spirit of play that is so infectious.
All right, thanks, Rick. John in Whitefish Bay now. John, hi.
Hi. I'd say Deep Purple Made in Japan, because all the songs are improvised quite a bit, and they're quite a bit different than the studio. And just that whole era, like Frank Zappa, Roxy and Elsewhere, and Zeppelin, all those bands of that era were kind of improvising a lot on stage. You'd get a 7-minute song in the studio that was half an hour.
John, thanks. And that's an interesting point, Steve, because you get some stretching out with like the solos that you might not get on that, especially a radio-friendly album release.
Yeah, sometimes the live version is your favorite because it's different.
John, thanks. We're going through callers quickly here. Dennis in Eau Claire. Dennis, hi.
Hey, I think Bob Seger live, Turn the Page, is one of the best songs.
That's one that gets picked a lot, Dennis. And Live Bullet, I can't listen to Bob Seger's studio so much anymore. I grew up with Live Bullet because he was a Michigan guy, and that's where I was. And I still have a soft spot for that one, Stephen.
Yeah, it's another case of somebody who was so at home on a live stage and had a little bit of an uneasy relationship with the studio. Has some great studio recordings, but really kind of came through as a powerhouse live.
All right, a couple more. No time for calls. Mike in Appleton likes the Woodstock album. We heard from Chris on Facebook. Summertime Blues by The Who off their Live at Leeds album. Mm-hmm. People can keep commenting on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steven, does this make you want to go back and listen to something?
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm still sitting there seething with jealousy over the person who got to see Paul Simon at Central Park. My girlfriend is going to see his final concert this weekend, and I am bitterly, bitterly jealous.
Yeah, all right. Just use that jealousy to do great work for NPR Music. Steven, always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Rob. It's always a pleasure.
Stephen Thompson, we've been talking about great live albums. Keep it going. Ideas Network Facebook page.